Blog Talk Radio.
Tuesday, May 19th, 2015, episode 47 of the Hockey Guys podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther, and my co-host, Chris Shannon. Let's get right into it, Chris. Well, first of all, how have you been, man? How was your weekend?
It was pretty good, man. You know, I'm finishing up school for this year, and I can't believe it's already gone, but I'm having a good time, you know. It's getting to be summer. I'll go up to my cottage soon, and it's just going to be a fun time, you know. Usually my summer consists of spending time with the family, but it's also one of the best times to watch hockey. I mean, listen to NHL. I mean, I love the business side of NHL. I love the management, so I love the draft, and I love the trade. So, in a way, you know, I'll be sad when the season ends, but I'm very excited for this upcoming season because it's going to be one remarkable one with the draft of McDavid and Eichel.
Where do Florida residents have cottages usually?
Well, I have a cottage up in New York, Adirondack, which my family's been going to, I don't know, for a long time. Yeah, so, and it's right next to Montreal. So, you know, the whole family connection, we're all really close. And we'll have, yeah, so it's just kind of cause it's close to Montreal on a lake. So it's nice.
Nice. That sounds awesome, man. I am green with envy. Very nice. All right. Well, we might as well start talking about hockey because that's what the podcast's about. Let's look at the Eastern Conference Finals. Last night, the Tampa Bay Lightning defeated the New York Rangers 6-2 in a beatdown at the Madison Square Garden. Tyler Johnson, who has really emerged as the star of these NHL playoffs, had a hat trick last night and bumped his goal total to 11. He's definitely near the top for the Conn Smythe watch. Chris, you know what? I'll just ask you right now, what are your initial thoughts on last night's game?
It was so reminiscent of Game 2 versus Montreal Canadiens. Versus Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, Tampa, they didn't necessarily dominate the game at the beginning, but they were great on the power play. They dominated the game on score sheet. And you know what? They got a good win there. That was a character win because I really thought if they went down 2-0, it would have been hard to get back up against a New York Ranger team like that. I mean, they put a little doubt in Henrik Lundqvist. You could see, like, the last couple of minutes of that game when he let in 6 goals, Lundqvist was pissed. And not pissed at himself. He was pissed at his players. So, you know, if you can get into – the only way you're going to be able to do well against Lundqvist consistently is get in his head, and I think they did that, and I think that's a good mission they've done. So I think that's going to be – that was a big game. You know what? I really did think New York's going to win the series, but that game, I mean, it could change a lot. Now, I still have my pick as New York, but I think the way that game went, Tampa looked like they were trotting around much better, much more high than they were before game two.
For all the heat that Rick Nash has taken in this postseason, and – you can argue whether or not some of it is deserved. The fact that he's only got 2 goals in this entire postseason, at some point you got to say, okay, where's the offense? Where's the production that we need? And if I'm Lundqvist right now, of course I'm pissed off. I mean, one of my players is in double digits in points, and that's Derek Stepan. And if you look down that list, I mean, Keith Yandle, 0 goals. Dan Girardi, 0 goals. JT Miller, 0 goals. Martin St. Louis, who the biggest storyline for him this postseason has been how he's not the player he used to be, how he's losing one-on-one battles, how he's getting beat for the puck, how he just hasn't been able to produce. And, yeah, 6 assists, but at some point you have to ask yourself where the production has been. And like you said, if I'm Lundqvist, I'm furious right now because he's been doing his part. He's been playing terrific goaltending, plus .930 save percentage. But you saw it even last night, right when that buzzer ran out, the first one off the ice was him. He was waiting for the door to be open to get off the ice because you could see the frustration mount on him. And when it comes to Tampa Bay, one player I don't think we've really given enough credit is Andre Palat, who, you know, was a seventh-round pick. And everyone's been making a big deal about Tyler Johnson being this undrafted, no-name guy coming out here and producing at an elite level. But that entire line that, you know, you look at the ages of those kids. I mean, Palat's 24, Tyler Johnson's 24, Kucherov is 21. I mean, we're really starting to break the trend of how teams need veterans in the postseason. Well, yeah, I'm sure you still need guys who have playoff experience and who have been there before, but, you know, when it comes to needing guys who are older and have, you know, that plus 30 age group, it's gone now, and Tampa Bay is showing that young guys are going to get you through the postseason.
The craziest thing of this all is that 3 years ago, they're in 20th place overall. And Steve Yzerman And I think it's a little bit of luck because, I mean, you don't get Tyler Johnson and Palat in this, like in the late rounds, and Johnson as a free agent. You don't get those guys from just guessing. I mean, because everyone even said, you know, the scouts at the time, when they looked at Johnson, he looked undersized, which, I mean, yes, that's an issue, but they shouldn't detect someone from not drafting the player. But he didn't
The days of saying size is a factor, they're nearly over. I mean, obviously, if you have two players who are the exact same, you're going to take the bigger one, but there really shouldn't be a bias against a guy who's 5'9", but still has ridiculous talent.
But that's the thing. This team, it's small, but it also had, like, that defense group. It's huge. You don't need a huge group. The game of hockey is changing. Speed is how you're going to win. Yeah, you do need a group that can hit and that can take hits, because we've seen teams, Montreal Canadiens, after they get hit consistently, kind of get tired, and that's what happened both these years. I really am convinced that the Montreal Canadiens, they are just, when they get hit mentally and physically, they're done. And I think that the series last year against Boston really hurt them. And I think that's what's so special with this Tampa team, is they've got all these parts that they can be a hitting team, they can be a speed team, and that's what you need. I mean, this Tampa team is exciting to watch. I think New York's exciting to watch as well. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, you look at the score sheet and the scores they've had lately. They've been, I think, one-goal leads almost every game. But they are so fun to watch, I find, New York, because you never know who's going to be that hero. Because, you know, Dominic Moore, I think, is one of the best depth guys in the league. Zuccarello, who's injured right now, he was a rocket. I mean, he's that guy, he's so small, but he acts like he's so big. I mean, you know, when people talk about how players act bigger than they actually are, I think Zuccarello is the perfect example, because he plays like he's 6'3".
I can't disagree with that. And the one
But Hunter, don't you think when he comes in that he'll be a huge X factor for the series, and that maybe that might be the end of the series? Because I think Zuccarello has the magnitude of being being able to create a different scenario in this season or in this series.
Of course he's going to be a major factor. I would have said that if he was in that series against Washington, it might not have even gone to 7 games. I mean, he really is an incredible player, and New York desperately needs that, especially at a time where their just lack of production is killing them. And I think the big thing is, especially when you see it in the playoffs, when teams get blown out in a single game and people think, oh, is this the turning point of this series? I don't think it really matters. I think if I'm a coach, I'd almost rather my team just get blown out so we can just forget about it. By the time the third period is over, you've already forgotten about the game, and now you're moving on to Tampa Bay. I expect big things from the Rangers coming in Game 3. I think they're going to come back with a much more solid effort, because essentially that was a beatdown on Tampa's perspective. Even though, for the most part, the Rangers were not dominating, but they were winning the possession battle. Tampa Bay was just capitalizing on so many opportunities. A lot of penalties from that game, and I know that some of them were rightfully so. They should have been a penalty, and teams were capitalizing on the power play. But, my God, I just don't like games like that where it almost seems like there's a whistle every 3 minutes, 4 minutes, where there's some sort of penalty. I guess my last point on that is Ben Bishop and Lundqvist. This is arguably as good a goaltending battle as Bishop Price was, or Holtby Lundqvist is. And this really has been the spring of goaltenders. I mean, as much as we talk about teams who need production from their forwards and getting some help from the blue line, it's the goalies that have been stealing the show. It seems like every goaltender's got a save percentage of at least 920 to upwards. And I think that for a lot of people, that sometimes is boring. They don't want to see this defensive style game where, I think I mentioned it on an earlier episode, it's like a pitcher's duel where you're just going head to head. But I'm loving it because we're truly appreciating how hard it is to score goals in the National Hockey League. It's not like the days where guys were getting 100 points, no questions asked, and your third liners were 50 point guys. Now you're really seeing how hard it is to generate offense. And that's why every little thing when it comes to whether or not it's a line combination, whether or not it's a young guy who's getting hot, whether it's Tyler Johnson and his 25.6 shooting percentage, you just got to find ways to generate offense. And right now, the Rangers are struggling to do so, and Tampa Bay isn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting series because both teams have certain scenarios that they're going to have to deal with. Lundqvist, I don't know. I think this next game is going to be huge for him. He's going to be in Tampa, you know. I think that's a little bit of pressure off of him. You know, going to Tampa may be the best thing after being blown out for the whole team. So I'm excited to see what New York does. But let's start talk. Let's move over to the Chicago Duck series. I was very surprised with maybe not really how that game ended, because I really do think that Chicago was a much better team than the score showed. And I think Freddie Anderson was amazing. I mean, like you were saying about the goaltending in the playoffs lately, I mean, he looked like Carey Price. He looked like Vince. Like, he had probably one of the best solid goalie nights I've seen all season. He made some remarkable saves. But that series, you know, what surprised me most is that the Anaheim Ducks, you know, we all talk about how the Chicago Blackhawks can play any type of game. You know, you give them any game. So can the Anaheim Ducks. They just did that right now, and we just saw that. They played a physical brand of hockey, but they also had that speed factor. I mean, it's something. The Anaheim Ducks aren't getting enough love around the NHL, and I haven't given them enough either, because they've got young players, they've got old players, and they've got superstars making this an incredible season. I want to change my pick, and I feel like it's a little too late, but I mean, I want to change my pick for the Anaheim Ducks this year for the Cup. I mean, every game, they're just proving us wrong, and you know, everyone's excuse was, oh, well, they played two easy matchups against Winnipeg and Calgary. I mean, they just played the best team in the NHL, and he looked very solid out there. And, you know, when you have a Ryan Kessler and Getzlaf as your top two centermen, I don't know who you can compare to that will even match up to those two guys. I mean, those guys physically and speed-wise, it's a scary team to play against. This series is going to be interesting. I think, you know, Chicago's going to have to do something different here, especially with their four defensemen.
To anyone who says the Ducks have faced easy competition so far, that's because they finished first in the conference. They earn the right to face easier competition. They earn the right to go up against the Winnipeg Jets team that weren't who we thought they were and got swept, and to roll through round two and now are facing a Chicago Blackhawks team that, you know what, maybe they got a little bit of tread on their tires. Maybe that series against Nashville took a little bit bigger of a toll than we thought it did. Maybe their series against Minnesota was just them facing a Minnesota Wild team that wasn't as good as we thought it was. And now we're seeing I never thought I'd say this, the lack of depth on Chicago's behalf. I mean, let's look at that third pairing right now. Kyle Komiski is going to replace David Rundblad tonight. Like, we go back to, I just think back to the trade deadline when the Blackhawks traded their first-round pick for Antoine Vermette, and Vermette's contributed with a big whopping one goal in his entirety since joining Chicago. Like, he's done absolutely nothing. You start to think back and think maybe that first round pick or whatever draft pick they could have used or whatever trade scenario they could have had, they should have improved on their blue line. Instead, they added Akimo Tiimonen, who seemed like he was going to retire before the start of the year due to health reasons. And then when he came back, he's looked nothing like the NHL defenseman that we saw for years in Philadelphia. Right now, in the playoffs, you can have a shorter bench. And when you have a blue line of Keith, Seabrook, Hjalmarsson, Oduya, obviously, you're going to lean on those guys a little bit more, but right now their lack of D is starting to hurt them. And not to mention, we're bearing witness to an unbelievable matchup between Ryan Kessler and Jonathan Toews. Those two were going at it hard in Game 1. Their faceoffs were nearly identical. And while Toews did have the upper hand in terms of shot attempts, Kessler did a great job of neutralizing him. And he had an off day yesterday. He didn't have to go to practice, but I think Ryan Kessler is an example of a guy who they may have asked a little bit much of him, Vancouver. And when you have a team that's on their way to being a championship team, when you have a lineup that you want to win the Stanley Cup, you have to have players that play above the role that they're assigned. And Ryan Kessler right now, who for so long was heavily leaned on in Vancouver and so many people asked much more of him, they wanted to be more productive offensive-wise, he's sitting comfy right now in a shutdown role in Anaheim where he knows that all the focus is on Perry and Getzlaf. And his only job right now is just to try and shut down Jonathan Toews, who, yes, he's one of the elite centermen in the National Hockey League, but Kessler does a good job of matching up against him. He's in his face every shift. I thought the Ducks in general were physical against Chicago and got in their face. And like you said, they can match their speed. And this is a Chicago lineup that you can't forget, too, there's a lot of miles on this team. When you take into account the amount of deep playoff runs they've had, the international competition that a lot of their roster has played through, I'm not saying that it's catching up to them. It's only been one game in the series, and for all we know, Chicago could come back and win 5-1 and hang back to Chi-Town. But, you know, for the most part, I think we're starting to see a Ducks team that we didn't give enough credit. Simone Dupree has been a great addition to a Ducks lineup, which I still understand Pittsburgh's logic in trying to acquire back Ben Lovejoy, but that's a discussion for another podcast. And Francois Boschman, too, has done a more than adequate job playing on that Ducks blue line, as well as Cam Fowler. And like you said, Frederick Anderson, 9-0 at home. He's been one of the standouts in this postseason. I think we got to give the Ducks more credit than we have before. And if they win tonight, that's a big deficit. As much as, you know, Jeff Merrick mentioned today on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast how when it comes to the Blackhawks, you can almost apply the classic cliches of they've been there before. They're a veteran group. They know how this works. They've done all of it before. But they're cliches for a reason. They're stereotypes for a reason because they have done this before. And you know what? They could get their asses kicked tonight in Game 2 and still come back to Chicago perfectly calm and be able to match the Series 2-2.
I like what you said about Vermette, though. And, you know, the Chicago team and the management, they've done everything correct. I mean, this is a solid team, and it will be a solid team forever, or for the next 5 years, or as long as they have Taze and Kane. But this is kind of like the last hurrah with this core. I mean, their cap, they can't keep this core together with the cap they're going to be in next year. I mean, the cap didn't go up as much as they wanted it to. So guys like Patrick Sharp, maybe even Seabrook, may be traded away this offseason. So this is actually really their last hurrah. What I thought about, though, yesterday, I was thinking about this, like, man, you can't go win a playoff series, especially against Anaheim Ducks, with four defensemen. And you got Antoine Vermette. Okay, I mean, you were scared about that Kane injury. But what about a guy like Jeff Petrie? I mean, the Montreal Canadiens got him for, I think, a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick, or maybe a third. But you paid a first-round pick for Vermette, who has done close to nothing. And Jeff Petrie, who, I mean, his stock went up an abundant amount. I mean, he's going to be close to $6 million. I think he should be in that $6 million figure. Why didn't they go after a defenseman or even someone even cheaper? I mean, there are so many veteran defensemen they could have gone after. I still don't really understand the team then trade. I don't understand why they brought him in. I mean, the guy, he hadn't played hockey for a full year, and now he's out there playing 5 minutes a game. Dave Rundblad.
It's that veteran leadership myth. It's that myth of veteran leadership that this old boys club of hockey, even though I wouldn't put Stan Bowman in that class, he arguably is one of the first pioneers of analytics in hockey. But it's just guys who think that, oh, he's a veteran. He's been there before. We got to bring him on. But what has Timonen brought to the table? What has Antoine Vermette brought to the table? I mean, like, I saw someone try to cite in an article how Vermette's experience with the 07 Senators has been a big part of this Blackhawks run. No, it hasn't. He's been useless. He's utterly useless. And it's starting to show now. Now the Hawks are going to look back in the offseason and go, what were we thinking with that trade when, heck, even Cody Franzen didn't do much with Nashville, but would he not be an upgrade over whoever the hell they have in now?
But I don't understand. I mean, they have veteran leadership. I mean, this team, the youngest guy probably on there is Timo Tiruvainen, who's done amazing. I mean, I can see why people are making this guy to be the next big thing. That third line, it's Vermette, Sharp, and Tiruvainen. That can be a first line on almost any team. I mean, that would be a first line on the Montreal Canadiens. They made the playoffs. That'd be a first line on the Boston Bruins. That'd be a first line on, Philadelphia.
Anybody.
I mean, these guys, yeah, it really is that. And that just shows how good the Chicago team is. This is going to be a real downslide if they don't make it past the Anaheim Ducks, because this is their last hurrah. They can't keep this team together like they did in 2010 when they won the Cup. They had to trade Buffon. They had to trade Ladd. This is their new – I mean, when you sign a guy or guys like Taze and Kane to that huge contract, you're going to have to suffer in other places. And this is going to be interesting this offseason for Chicago. If they win the Cup, if they don't, because – they can't keep this core together. You know, it's really early, and we saw one game, and I still think Chicago will win this series, but they have to do something different. They can't rely on these four defensemen. I mean, if I'm Quenneville, I still try to put Timonen and Rundblad out there, because why not get them more comfortable out there? They didn't look comfortable, and that was the issue, because they don't play enough. So, you know what? I'm excited to see what happens here. I think, Quenneville is probably the best coach with the best mustache. So, you know, he gets the respect from the players with that mustache because it's the beard.
You ever see, if you go on Google Images and search up Quenneville, there's a lot of images of him crushing a cigar or a stogie outside of the United Center. That guy,
he's got that raspy voice for a reason.
And he, like you said, he's a hell of a coach, and he's done a tremendous job with this Blackhawks team. One more point before we move on to the coaching carousel of the National Hockey League. The Anaheim Ducks' third line of Nate Thompson, Kyle Palmieri, and Andrew Cogliano, they've been incredible. And for so long, I think the big knock against Anaheim was their lack of depth. A lot of people weren't sure if they had a lineup that obviously would make the playoffs, but didn't know if it would go deep into the postseason. But they've been incredible. And Andrew Cogliano, who for so long was stuck in the hellhole that is at the Edmonton Oilers, who we'll get to later, he now is, like I said, guys who overachieve in the role that they're assigned. Cogliano is one of the fastest players in hockey. He did incredible at the University of Michigan. I remember there was so much made about him at the World Juniors of why is this college kid playing for Team Canada? And then it turned out, oh, he's actually pretty damn good at hockey. And he's been incredible for this team. We saw Thompson get the goal in game one. I mean, I just wanted to give that shout out to them because Palmieri, who has struggled a little bit in the postseason so far, but he came out big in game one. That third line is huge, and especially for a Ducks team that Bruce Boudreau, he's going to try and match up lines in this game. And obviously, you know, Kessler's going to be on Tay's ass. But I think there's going to be a good chance that we see this third line again break out. And this is their time to shine. Obviously, you saw a little bit of rust off Perry and Getzlaff in that first game. I think that a lot of the workload's been on their shoulders for the first two rounds, especially as they, you know, coasted right through Winnipeg and so on. But I think this Ducks team, you know, a lot of sneaky depth. And as much as I think Chicago will take tonight's game, it'll be even heading back to Chi-Town. Man, the Ducks are good. The Ducks are good. All right, let's talk about coaches because not actually that many games left in the National Hockey League season. Think about this, Chris. There's like less than 15 games left in the season. Like there's not that much hockey left. Doesn't that suck?
It's depressing. Yeah, it is. But, I mean, like I said earlier in the show, I'm excited for this draft. I think this year's draft and free agency, I think some teams are going to really remodel their shape. I mean, I think we say that every year, but there are names out there like Kessel. I mean, I think Seabrook will be a for sure target out on the trade market because I don't think Chicago can keep that guy. So I think there's some big names out there. Phil Kessel, we think he's going to get moved. Dion Phaneuf. It's going to be an exciting offseason for sure. But, yeah, I know it's crazy. I really can't imagine that. But I'm excited. I want to see where this Mike Babcock thing goes down to because it looks like it's narrowed down to either Buffalo or Detroit, and supposedly Buffalo has a huge contract out there for Mr. Babcock. If I had to put my money on right now, with looking at Twitter and seeing all these writers talk about it, it looks like Buffalo may be getting Babcock.
And I think the big thing, too, was obviously Babcock's relationship with Murray when they were in Anaheim. Babcock was just at the World Championships, and he got to watch Jack Eichel up close and personal, and we really got to see just how good he is. I mean, Jack Eichel already, as much as people are freaking out about McDavid, Eichel's a top six forward on any team in the NHL already. So I think that that'll be exciting. Not to mention, remember, Chris, the first episode we did back when we reincarnated this podcast, Evander Kane got traded to Buffalo, and everyone's forgetting that he's going to be there next year, and he's a pissed-off young man who for so long has been taking character assassinations from folks, and now he's going to come back and join a Buffalo team that could have Mike Babcock there next year. And like you said, it's an option that seems to make sense. I mean, a lot of people were wondering, well, he wants to win now. He doesn't know if he wants to be on a rebuilding team. And that's fair enough. For any coach, they don't want to spend too long with a team. And the biggest thing that I find is always teams rebuild with someone and they get better. And then when they take that next step, they fire their coach after a playoff failure, hire a new guy, and that's what puts them over the hump. No better example than Michel Therrien and Dan Bylsma. Which, by the way, I mean, where's Dan Bylsma? Why is no one talking about Dan Bylsma? Like, how?
Well,
is,
I think.
How
I,
is, go ahead.
I think he got a second interview with San Jose, which I actually think would be a good fit. But yeah, he hasn't been out there. He really hasn't.
I think he would do well in San Jose. I think he would be a fresh. I think he'd be a fresh voice for a San Jose lineup that, for so long, has dealt with so much tumultuous storylines. Obviously, Thornton getting the C stripped, and you know the playoff failures that they've faced. And like San Jose takes so much heat, but do we forget that like this season was the first time they haven't made the playoffs since God knows when? I mean, they've actually been one of the best teams of the 2000s, but it just goes back to that same thing where if you don't win a cup, then you're not going to get the respect you deserve. And like I said, no one's talking about Dan Bylsma. He's got the same amount of cups as Mike Babcock. And you could argue that if you switch fortunes, would Babcock do any better in Pittsburgh with a lineup that their lack of depth beyond Crosby, Malkin, Letang has killed them for so long? I mean, I'll circle back to Babcock soon, but I just think that Bylsma is not getting the love that he deserves. And if he does get the job in San Jose, I think that's a good fit for him. But when it comes to Babcock, it seems like it's between Buffalo or Detroit. Bob McKenzie said that Toronto's out of the running. I think, thank God, I've had enough of hearing all these, well, if Babcock came to Toronto, he'd be the hero. And if Babcock won the Cup in Toronto, they'd name a school after him. Of course they would. Whoever wins the Cup in Toronto is going to get schools named after him. The healthy scratch black ace who wins the Cup is going to get a school named after him if Toronto wins the Cup. But I'm glad that that part of it is squashed because now Toronto can just move on and focus on rebuilding that front office. But Babcock, his best option might be Buffalo. I think there's going to be a lot of money there. We saw owner Terry Pegula throw a ton of money at Rex Ryan to make him come to Buffalo, and that made the Buffalo Bills a mainstream name in the NFL now after years of mediocrity. And if you're able to land a big fish like Babcock, that's a huge culture change in that situation. And now next year with Jack Eichel and Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian, who I still think doesn't get the love he deserves, the Sabres aren't going to be bad. I don't think they'll be a playoff team next year. I still think they're going to have to battle in a relatively tough Atlantic division. But people in Buffalo better be excited because I think that Mike, if he does go there, then that'll be good for them. But the problem, though, is what if he stays? Now what's the situation? What if he ends up staying in Detroit and this whole thing was a ruse to try and just get more money in the negotiations with the Red Wings?
And that's a good point because that could totally be true. I think we've seen that in a couple articles. His family wants to stay in Detroit, but he also has the responsibility of rising up that cap for the coaches. That's a huge responsibility. I mean, that's what he's going to be known for. He's going to be known for the highest paid coach. He's changing the fraternity of coaching and how they are paid. So when we talked about that, but I want to talk about Buffalo because I think this really will be an interesting team this offseason. They have lots of money space for cap. I mean, they can go after some big names out here this year. I'd really look out for them to give some offer sheets out there. I mean, there's a guy like Tyler Toffoli out there that's ready for a new contract. I don't know if LA's going to be able to sign him to a big contract. It may have to be a bridge deal, which he may not want. So I'd look at that as a good possible destination. Galchenyuk's a restricted free agent. You know, another guy. Sad. There are some big guys out there that are RFAs that no one's really talking about. And
Nazem Kadri.
Exactly. I mean, Buffalo, I mean, they'll go after a guy like Justin Williams, and this whole team can change because you got a guy like that who's a good, solid second liner. I think they have a good first line. You have Jack Eichel, Tyler Ennis, Kane. That's a good first line. I mean, that's a first line that'll go bring you to the playoffs. It just matters how they fill that the other positions, you know, the third, the second, the fourth line, their defense. They've got some great young defensemen. It's going to be an interesting offseason for them and Buffalo. I really look at those, or them and the Edmonton Oilers. I think those two teams will be the most busy.
We didn't even talk about it, and as we say this, we're a few minutes away from Tom McClellan being officially introduced as the Edmonton Oilers head coach. God, I just hate Edmonton so much, but man, they had an incredible offseason. Connor McDavid, Peter Chiarelli, Tom McClellan. I mean, this team has improved in a lot of ways. Of course, it all depends on the on-ice product, but you know, Tom McClellan has a history of improving players. Logan Couture, Brent Burns. He got the most out of Joe Thornton, who's now in his mid-30s. And you have to think that he's going to help an Edmonton Oilers lineup that for so long, the question is how it's going to develop. We've got 60 seconds left on the show. Chris, any last thoughts?
You know what? I think Chicago will take it tonight, and I think next game tomorrow, I think New York will have to be big there because Tampa's going to be home, and they're a good team out at home. So it's going to be essential next two games for both these or all four teams because you know, if Chicago goes down 2-0, I'm not saying they're out of it because I would never say that about Chicago, but that is going to be one hard team to come back from.
What the hell, NHL? What's with this 9 o'clock start time? 6 o'clock in the West Coast? I mean, why can't we just have the either 7 or the classic playoff 8 o'clock start time? What's wrong with that? I mean, I don't think anyone in Anaheim has a problem with going to a hockey game at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and then enjoying the perfect weather afterwards. Oh, well. is the Hockey Eyes Podcast. I'm Hunter Crowther. He's Chris Shannon. Check out our next episode, which will likely be Thursday or Friday. And enjoy the playoff hockey tonight, folks. Biggie!